Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the C-Squared Podcast. This is your host, Curtis, with my co-host, Gaia, and we are here with our special guest, Mr. Tommy Stewart of Black Doomba Records. He's also in multiple bands. I'm going to forget some. I'm not even going to attempt to say which bands there are, because he's got a few on the go. Plus, he was also in a thrash metal band called Hallows Eve on Metal Blade at one point. And he does a lot of other things, too. But we will get into that on the podcast. Hopefully we can get into all this in 45 minutes. So to start off, thank you, Tommy, for joining me and Gaia.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be on one of my top two favorite podcasts ever. I can't even believe I get to be on it.
Sweet. So to start off, Gaia is going to go with question number one.
Okay, first question. Can you like give us kind of like a summary of, I am sorry, I removed a toy from my dog and she found another one. Like she's.
Right?
It's holiday hijinks going on.
What was it from her butt?
No, it's just like, I removed one toy and she picked another one. I don't know where it came from.
I want to say something. My cat has taken to stealing all my socks and leaving them around the house. He opens a drawer. Food? Yeah, he opens the drawer. It's clean socks. It's not dirty socks. So he doesn't go to the hamper or anything like that. He opens up the fucking drawer and he leaves them all around the house. And I can't find my socks half the time. Anyways, just my story.
That's very cute. I used to have a cat that would just remove the stuff and just leave. He was such an asshole. It's just like, why? Why are you doing this? At least go in the drawer and sleep in it. Do something. Just don't empty it. But anyway, so back on the podcast.
My cat may show up on top of that amp. Whenever I'm doing anything Zoom, he shows up back there often.
I hope he shows up today.
I know. I hope so too, because that's sort of his thing.
So tradition. Okay, so I'm going to go back in the podcast. So I was going to ask you, can you give us kind of like a summary of like your history with music, like how you got into music to where you are right now?
Well, like I like to say, I'm first and foremost, I'm a musician. I just sort of grew up that way. There was a lot of music playing around the house, different instruments, whatever. And eventually I came into doing the whole Hallows Eve thing. How did I start? I have my little story where I had a moment where I decided I'm going to be a musician. I went to see, I'm older than a lot of people. So I was 7 years old and at the premiere of the Beatles movie, Help. I'm holding my mom's hand. We're leaving the theater. We've just seen the movie. And she arbitrarily, this is a family story I got told a lot. And we're leaving and I'm holding my mom's hand and she looks down and says, so by the way, casually, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I was told, I looked back at the poster and pointed at it and said, that looks like a good job.
That is so cute.
I think at that very moment of seeing them doing all this crazy stuff and doing the music and everything, I just went nuts about it. I just decided then. So anyway, fast forwarding, I ended up being in the 80s. I actually started playing in bands in the 70s. In the 80s, I was in Hallows Eve. We got on Metal Blade Records, did three albums that everybody seems to like to this day. And then through that, I music, get up to the 2000s. And then I started, there were several versions of Hallows Eve. And I was just tired of doing thrash. There was 30 years of it. I can do other things. I'm not one trick. So the whole time I'd been recording all these things and I've always dabbled in it and I was always at the board during those albums. So I decided to go into other ideas of music that I had. I ended up with Bloody Jars, Negative Wall. And then eventually what started it with I have the studio and I've produced other people's albums in here, about 40 of them.
Oh, wow.
And I have a ridiculously long credit list.
Yeah, the long
main
list.
The main things, but yeah, I have a super long credit list. But they, I was trying to get, I had this idea about the Tommy Stewart's direwolf thing. This goes into the Black Dumba thing. I wanted to do something really experimental. So I threw some demo out there on that. It got a little going. I did like a demo album that I did not really release. It's kind of floating around there, but I only did 100 copies of it. Anyway, I tried to get signed. There were about 8 companies that are active right now that I sent it to. They all ignored me, even the ones I like to this day that I'm even friendly with, but they all didn't answer. And I said, you know, I am so tired of this. And I went, there is no, I sell 5,000 albums a year. Somebody's just, well, they just don't want to make any money or something. So I just said, I really got tired of it. And I got kind of snarky about it. I said, okay, fine. I know how to do it. I really don't want to do it because I know it's a lot of work, and it really is a lot of work. But then I began to change my mindset of, but I've been experienced. I've been doing this stuff for 4 decades. I could probably really help other bands that are of the level. And that's what made me start when I had that conversation with myself, that's what made me start Black Dumba Records. Mm-hmm. Was I said, you know, if I get the band that's not beyond what I can do for them, but they're at the level where they are very active on socials, they're not practically touring, but they're playing out of state a lot. They're making the efforts. I know they got day jobs and they're playing out of state. They're playing live. And let's pick a subgenre, something. And since I was interested in doom at the time, or basically like 70s blues oriented, I don't know what you want to call doom. It's this umbrella of like 13 different elements, and you can just pick one. And this is this kind of doom and that kind of doom and this kind of doom, whatever. So I decided, so I started picking up a band here and a band there, and I had to adjust the contracts to fit. Well, that didn't work, and that didn't work. And over time, I think I've really honed it down. I'm entering my 5th year right now in January 1st. That is the beginning of the 5th year. It's pretty cool. So I'm there. That's where I am right now. I got to Black Dumba Records because nobody else would put me out. And I said, well, I'll put me out. How about that? I know how to do it. So now I'm doing all the work. And oh, and everybody wants to, I saw somebody posting a thing from another label who said that they wanted to show what goes on behind the scenes of the label. I almost did it, but I was like, don't do it. You're just being a smart ass. You know what goes on at the behind the scenes of the label? I was going to set a thing up and show me doing filing for about 15 minutes. That's what goes on behind the scenes. A lot of filing. A lot of staring at the computer, moving photos around, getting this, adjusting. There's nothing. We're not doing maniacal behind the scenes Mad Magazine stuff in here.
So, Tommy, I wanted to ask you something. So now, why do you have so many different projects? Because a lot of them are doom. So right. Why under different names the ones you're in, just out of curiosity?
Right. They sort of overlap each other. One was Bloody Jars, and it had 2 guitarists.
Yeah.
The idea of that one, it was kind of pushing to see if we could be a little proggy. Hardly any of it's, it's sort of maybe 40% 4/4 time. The rest of it's all kind of crazy stuff. And I was just seeing like what people would like or not like. And yeah, we threw that out there, and it wasn't a very motivated band. So I stopped doing it.
Sure.
I was motivated, but I can't be the only one doing everything. If I am, yeah, then why not just, so then I moved on. I was moving on into the Tommy Stewart thing. My drummer really, really, really wanted to do something besides that. And he kept pushing for me to play with another friend of ours. Mm-hmm. So I said, I don't have time to do this. I said, if we do this really fast. And they, so we got together. This happened in 14 days. We came together, and in one practice, we talked about the concept. It's going to be sci-fi. It's going to be this. I'll do the lyrics as I can. I'm going to, if something doesn't make sense, I'm just going to make up the language, which I did. A whole lot of it was just made up verbs, and I just made it up.
That's awesome.
I didn't have a word that rhymed. I just made one up. I just took some Hawaiian vowel type syllables and went, akuaye, and then it just made it sound like it meant something. Just say it passionately. Doesn't matter if you're right or anything. Same thing you do if you forget your lyrics on stage.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you say. Just say it like you really mean it.
Yeah, yeah. I love coffee. Yeah.
What I do, because a lot of vocals are vowels, is what I usually just start saying like vowel. A-I-O-U. And people don't catch it. They just think you're doing something important. I caught that. Did you hear that? Anyway.
Oh my God, that's
what the heck were we talking about? I went off the rail.
I just want to add this. Like, I realize as I'm getting older and like I'm playing more shows, it's just about confidence. Like, if you're like confident in whatever you do, even if your notes are like kind of off, it doesn't matter. It's just your confidence that's going to.
I think that's kind of what I was getting at was that if you say it passionately and you're playing it like you mean it and all that, then people will be entertained. They'll buy into it. It's like you can play the note A, or you can play the note A, just the best A, you know, how you produce it and how you present it, all that. It's still the same. There's only so many notes. You got to do stuff to them. You can't just do them.
Yeah. You have to make them pretty.
All right. So we were somewhere in Black Doomba land just then, but I forgot what I was saying.
We're talking about all your projects.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the sci-fi thing, Negative Wall, it didn't really take off. But here's what was fun about it. I told him I didn't have any time. I said, we have to knock this out. I have a studio. So we came in there. We said, okay, this is going to be about this. This is going to be about this. This is going to be about this. So we rehearsed some songs almost every day for about 4 or 5 days. I had him come to the studio over the weekend. The drummer and the guitarist, I just sat here, did my thing. I'm actually sitting at my board, by the way. And they did their tracks, and I was sort of like, thank you, your album will be ready next Tuesday. So I ran them off, and much to the guitarist later, he said, I kind of appreciate it if you'd let me come in. And I didn't. I just sat down and played along with whatever tracks they were. I just did my vocals, like, practically on the spot. And then I contacted my people. I put it in there. I did up an appropriate contract and had them sign it, just signing the whole project over to me. I sent it to I mastered it. I sent it out. I had it in production. So we made it up, wrote it, rehearsed it, recorded it, mastered it, and had it on its way to production in 14 days.
Mm. Oh my God.
Never mind this 2 years and 1 year.
Yeah, I'm jealous.
So sometimes I'm just kind of throwing something, and you know what, who knows, if people did like it. Actually, I had pretty good reviews, but again, I didn't feel like the other members were necessarily as motivated. I was having to take care of every aspect, and I just kind of started the label right then. There's a lot of work in the label, so I have to schedule, like, every hour's got a name with me. You know, I have to schedule, like, I'm doing booking from this time to this time. Now I got to get my hotel straight for January this time and this time. This afternoon I worked on the DDP. I went over the CD stuff for the upcoming Minerva album. I loaded all the Holy Roller vinyl stuff today. I had to go back and forth with the band. Is this the correct spelling? Did you mean to do this? Are these photos good with you? So I'm QCing everything through the band. And a lot of labels don't necessarily include the band on every step. I do, because I want the label to be an artist-oriented label.
Oh, I love that.
And it is time-consuming, because sometimes it takes them 3 days to go orange on purple or purple on orange for the vinyl. I don't know. We got to check with Jim. And after about a day of that, I come back and go, you realize that we have like 17 steps to go, and we can't take 3 days for each one. You got to make up your mind. And I remind them, some labels might even be asking you. You just see your album come out and go, I wonder what it looks like. So I'm really asking you, but I'm expecting you to go ahead and get on with it too.
What is the actual, just so people know, Tommy, what is the actual length of time between getting signed, we'll say, to your label, since we're talking about your label, and actually putting out the finished product?
In the case, if they come in, this has to do with the artist.
Yep.
I try to not sign them till they've shown me, till I've heard the music. They've shown me the album. I've seen the art.
Yeah.
I definitely don't want to get, because I want to know what I'm asking myself is, can I sell this?
Yeah.
Not do I like it. I like lots of bands I turn down.
Yeah.
But can I sell it?
Yeah.
Again, I go back to, are they on social media? Are they on, you know, regularly, daily on social media? Are they doing this? Are they doing this? Are they very active? Okay. But artistically, what I'm looking for is I need to see the, I need to see all the lyrics up front. I need to see front and back cover. I need to see professional photos. I might see a flaw or two, like say somebody, their best photo shows them holding a Mountain Dew can. That just happened to me. And I had to get jiggy with some Photoshop.
That's awesome.
One had on a band t-shirt. But I found they sent enough individual photos in that I was able to find a photo where you couldn't see the band name on the t-shirt.
Mm.
I got a really good close up of the person. I'd like to have shown that he was holding a guitar, but you can kind of see the edge of it, but I had to try to get away from the shirt. But so you want to see I want to see what I'm buying, because I'm about to drop anywhere from $4,000 to $7,000 on a band.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not going to just throw that kind of money out there on like, this is cool stuff, let's put it out. No, it's got to be sellable.
Yeah.
So you want to see all that stuff up front. I've got a band right now, I'm dying to sign, but they just put out their first album, not on a label themselves. And so I've made it clear to them. I've contacted them and said, I want to sign you, but I have to see, you have to go in the studio and make the album, make a cover and everything. And then I'll send you a contract.
Yep.
I'm thoroughly planning on doing it. I would love to just say I like them and send them one right now and just get them before somebody else does, because I'm pretty sure they're going to get signed anyway.
Yep.
And that happens sometimes. There's two or three bands right now that they got signed. I contacted them and then they got signed and I found out about it and I went, oh, their album's come out next month. I was behind. Dang that so-and-so, he's always one step ahead of me.
Well, that
is not so, free.
So, you know what? I don't think you answered the question totally, Tommy. I just realized,
but you know what I said.
You gave me a lot of information, but I just realized you didn't actually answer.
Oh, how did I? Oh, juggling. All the things. No. I schedule everything.
No. What's the time frame from starting?
Right. Okay, so that's different right now. So from signing. Really,
I thought you.
Yeah, then I told you about how to sign the band. Then I said, okay, so once you get the band signed, then I have to make sure I have all the materials. That may take some going back and forth, even though they had it. Maybe they needed to adjust one thing or they need to do better photos. And so I'm really waiting on them. The variable at that point is on the band.
So wait a minute. Just to clarify here. Wait a minute. So are you saying then if a band came to you with everything fully ready to go and you wanted to sign them today, you could put them out next month?
I could put them out in about 5 months.
Five months.
Right now, through the people I go through, CD is taking, when I turn the materials in on a CD, let's say at the beginning of September, then I'm being notified now that they're about to be shipped.
Okay.
Made my final deposit today and they gave me the tracking number in the same day.
Okay.
Boom. Okay. And that was turned in on September. Now vinyls, we've recently, last year or two, had something happen that all the labels have to deal with.
Yeah.
Even the big ones.
Yeah,
that's where the vinyls are taking forever to get made.
Mm-hmm.
I'm told it may even get worse for the next year. Mm-hmm. I just now hustled two bands, their materials. I've just now been hustling in there before the turn of the year because they told me the prices are going to go up too.
Oh no! And so they're
already expensive enough.
Oh.
So we're going to have to go up a dollar on selling them. And you know, I'll find other ways to get money to make up for that. I'm not going to make the vinyls, but I'm sure it's going to go up.
Yeah, I think they'll still sell personally. Do you, just out of curiosity, before Guy asks their next one, have you been finding CDs selling better since the vinyl shortage, or has it not made a difference?
Not really, not for me.
Okay.
It's about 20-30% of what I make is CDs being sold. I don't bother with cassettes because that's such a niche. I can't even
do
it. 3%. But what I put in my agreements is the band can do it.
Okay. Fair.
Oh,
Because that way, because here's where they're selling. The cassettes are really selling on the merch tables, I think.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, yeah.
That's why it's very important the bands go out and play, because I'm making sure that they have vinyls and CDs at their live show. They're able to get them at cost through me.
Yeah, yeah.
So they can sell them and have anywhere from 50 to 80% profit margin at their shows by buying them. I buy a large quantity, and I've got it in the contract where they can buy a smaller lot. They have to buy a lot. But that's one of the things I'm doing for the bands. I make it where they're obviously not going to sell, 500 albums or whatever at this level overnight. But they can sell 50 to 100 or 125 inside of some time with their merch tables.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people will buy it direct, but mostly they're going to buy it on their merch tables live. Yeah. So that's why I want them out there playing, because that's a form of distribution for me. I do have international distribution. I have Bandcamp and Big Cartel and other things. But most of the stuff that I'm going to sell, a lot of it's going to be through the bands. When they sell out, they come back and buy another lot.
Okay.
Makes sense.
It lowers my risk of buying that larger amount.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't really make money on it, but it lowers my risk because they're taking some of the money back that I risked and making a lot smaller. I can still make a profit margin, and it's a long sell. Most of them don't sell overnight or anything.
What's your best seller?
Huh?
What's your best seller, like, in merch?
You know, it depends on the online in sales, it's mainly vinyl.
Mm.
I do get some digital, and it depends on the band and their audience.
Okay.
I go out and play a lot. I try to, and when I'm out touring, I sell more touring than I do online as the label. So when I go tour, I don't set up a Tommy Stewart's Direwolf. I'm backing up. I got to back up.
Okay.
What I try to do at the label, one of the things I try to do is get all the bands that own the label. It's a small label. I don't want 100 people. I don't want 100 releases a year. I like having 4 to 6 people to work bands at a time, because I want to focus on those people. And I make it clear to them that I want them to share each other's posts, thus magnifying everything they all do. I want them to all help each other get shows.
Okay, that explains why I'm always seeing every one of your bands sharing it. Oh, smart.
Yeah, that is so smart. That, like,
and probably like once a month, I make a point of thank you. We all have a group thing. So it's BDR/Minerva, BDR/Holy Roller, whatever. Yep. And I'll make a thing saying, thank you so much for sharing each other's posts and helping each other get shows and gig swapping. And I send that out like once a month to remind everybody. Because maybe a couple of them have been a little short lately. Mm-hmm. And it's just a nice way to remind everybody to keep doing that. Because it's making you all stronger by working together as a family in the label. And it helps my label too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm getting tagged all the time by your bands. I'm like, wow, they're pretty good. But now I know you're the mastermind behind that. Because I thought they were just...
I tell every one of them to tag you everything they do.
Because I just thought they just did it. And I was like, wow, that's smart. But...
Okay, wow, they're great. I got a call out that Richie Randall from Gravehumper is one of the smartest band marketers I've ever seen.
He is insane with that. Like, in a good way. Not in a bad way, but he is fucking insane. Richie, if you are listening to this, you are nuts, but you are good.
He's like, amazing. As a matter of fact, I keep an eye on him to see what I can do, because he gives me a lot of great ideas. I go, Richie did that. What a great idea. I better get, then it sort of gives me like an hour's worth of stuff. I should have been doing that all along, you know?
I know. It's fucking insane. Guy, where were we going with the next question? We've got about 15 minutes left, just so you guys know. We're already at past the 30-minute mark.
Okay. Well, I do have a question, because, like, you said that most of the band, they sell a lot while playing shows. The past 2 years, there weren't really shows. Did they adapt?
Yeah, during that time, I was like everybody else. I was encouraging everybody to get new photos, write and record your album now. You can record in the studio and get artwork.
Mm-hmm.
I actually bought, over the year when we were in isolation, I actually bought the rights to 9 covers that I don't even have a band to use them on. I just have them on hold.
That's sometimes, awesome.
Sometimes you might just, it's nice that you have the artwork there to use for whatever. And you can use pieces of the art too, maybe, you know? Mm-hmm. I do that all the time, use pieces of it. So when bands say, I don't have a single cover, I go, how about this? I just have them.
Nice.
I like art anyway, so I'm always buying little pieces of art and stuff.
So I want to move this a little bit to a different direction unless Gaia wants to continue on this. Okay, so, all right, so you started in Hallows Eve back in 1980-something.
Yeah.
Do you know the year before I go on?
We've officially became Hallows Eve in 83. First album came out in 85.
85, okay. And you guys were on Metal Blade initially, correct? Or am I mistaken on that? Okay, cool. So I know they weren't as big back then. I mean, they were big, but they weren't as big as they are now.
Right now, yeah.
Yeah, not as big as they are now. But you are still getting your albums reissued through them. How does that work? Do you still get paid on that, if you're allowed to say, or do they own everything?
Oh yeah. They're good people. Cool. I love you. It's like I'm still on Metal Blade, but now we're working at on Hallows Eve stuff in a different way. And nice. In fact, during the past year, I just worked on our second and third album. Going through mounds of live material and finding bonus and rehearsal stuff and junk like right. that. And to mix it up and master it the best I can. A lot of the stuff, the live stuff, it's off of cassettes.
Oh, wow.
Done on soundboards from back in the day. So it had to really be cleaned out the best it could. But, you know, people eat that stuff up anyway. They like it. Just like I like it too. So our second and third album are about to come out. And they kept delaying it, but I worked on I had to do a statement. I added photos, and I worked with my A&R guy from the German Metal Blade to do all this. It was all last year, but they had to wait. Gosh, I mean, same thing, like 10 months. It was supposed to come out like October, then November, then December. Now it's coming out in January. I know it is because they just asked, they confirmed my address again today to send me my samples. And I went, nice. Oh, okay, so it's coming out. It's done. They made.
So how does it work, though? So they own it and they just pay you still? Or are you still in control of it? Or, like, what is it with you?
The first three albums were, the contract had no end.
Oh, okay.
Back in the old days.
Yeah, fair.
When I do contracts with people, I have a time that.
Okay.
From the date of signing that your time with me ends. If you haven't turned the materials for the option album, then it's not going to happen. You're just too slow. With Hallows Eve back then, and I don't know how it was for the other bands, but anyway, it was common back then that when you signed with people, it was sort of, those albums were like, there might not be a date to the end of it. So they can put them out over and over and over and over. In different configurations, and you have a deal, whatever deal you made with them. I did get to renegotiate a little bit this time, and they brought it up.
So cool.
That's how cool they are.
That's pretty cool. Okay.
Yeah, they renegotiated it with me, and it's a lot better now.
Cool. Yeah, because I was going to ask you if you could bring that over to Black Doomba, but I guess you just answered my question, and you can't.
I did have the fourth album. I did my on my own without the label, and I did bring it into distribution in Black Doomba. And so, you know, it's like, I have Plastic Head for distribution in Europe, and they have copies of the fourth Hallows Eve album and all that, but I can't really sign myself. I mean, I can sign myself when it's Tommy Stewart's Direwolf because there's nobody else in the band.
Yeah.
A main drummer and a couple of tour drummers, but it's not really I'm not going to sue myself.
I hope not.
But I can't this is the problem about making a band and then having it on my label is I can't really sign it because there's a conflict of interest there. Not possible, is it?
Wait. So you don't have a contract with yourself for your own label, but you put it out. That's interesting. Okay, cool.
Well, the two bands, I'm not even sure that the contract would stand up with the two bands I was in. That was after the more I studied it, the more I got into it, the more I realized, nah, you can't do that.
Yeah, no, I get it now. Where was I going to ask you? What was I going to ask you?
I learned a whole lot in the last 5 years. I learned a lot about dealing with bands too.
Well, why don't you tell us one of the things, Tommy?
And help me.
We got 8 minutes. I just realized.
I learned if you get the right level and they're really motivated, they are very appreciative and get even more motivated by you helping them
mm-hmm.
with what you know and what you can do for them. And they'll mm-hmm. say, hey, we're going to try and do so-and-so. I go, oh, no. I have this guy over here and he can do it for less. What's the number you got? And I go, hey, I can get it done cheaper over here with this guy or mm-hmm. whatever. Or don't do that. You're wasting your time. This is how you really should do it and so forth. I'm just telling you the mistakes I've already made and have found a better way of doing it. I'm trying to save you a year.
Yeah.
You know, so this is one of the things that I really have found rewarding about having the label is that I made all my marks and I've been doing this a long time, about 4 decades or so. And I feel like this is my way of sort of giving back as a patron of the arts myself.
Yep.
Now I'm helping other people. And this is why when we go out and play, if my band's on the bill, I go, just put me first. Let me get out and play for 30 minutes and get it out of my system. And then you guys get up there and, you know. But then what? There might not be anybody here when you play. And I go, I ain't worried about all that. It's you guys. I'm here to maybe me being up there will draw a few people to see you is what my real idea is. And what I do is I do a Black Doomba Records pop-up store at every place. This is one of my tricks. I don't do a Tommy Sorts Direwolf thing.
Yeah.
I do a Black Doomba Records pop-up store everywhere with banners and all that and all the stuff except for whatever band is playing with me that night. I take a picture of it. This is the trick.
Yeah.
Because I do it as the business, and I had to go do some where I'm not even playing, but because I'm doing it as the business, I get to do tax deductions on the mileage, the hotels, the food and all.
Yeah.
As long as I make sure it's a Black Doomba Records, my real business, not my head.
Yeah.
That's why I take a picture of the merch table every day and date it, put it in a file to make sure I can show that. So that's one of the ways. So people have such a hard time touring, and I'm always telling them if there's a way you can make your band be a business or some kind of partnership or however you want to set it up, then you could. There's a lot of tax deductions you guys could be doing, and you're wondering how you can afford to tour. And I'm like, you can, but you have to have cash flow. That's mm-hmm. one of the problems. You have to be able to kind of float it. But if you're doing taxes later, you can get that all that stuff back. Man, yep. I mean. Not manufacturing, but pretty much everything else you can deduct.
Yep.
That's how I stay at hotels. Everybody's like, hotels, we don't know what that is. And I go, because you're not doing deductions.
Yep. 100%.
I can deduct a parking lot, a truck stop parking lot. I can deduct a hotel.
So before, so we got to like 5 more minutes. So one more question I wanted to ask you, Tommy, because I'm sure Gaia's probably got 1 or 2 left too. So how has your connection with Hallows Eve and Metal Blade helped you in your career now, if at all?
I think it gives me a little shout out, but I think the audience that's for Black Doomba and Doom Records and all, they're kind of aware of that old stuff, but I think they're just aware of it. I haven't played it up either. I want this to float on its own.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand that too, because it's totally different genres, but I was kind of curious if it kind of
used... When I go play out there in live, there will be people show up but just because they know me, and they'll bring Hallows Eve albums to sign and everything.
Oh. Yeah.
But not a lot of people. It'll be a couple or 5 or whatever. So I'm trying to make this float on its own accord.
Yeah.
It's not really about me. It's about the whole, about all the bands.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I was just curious. Gaia, what else do we got for Mr. Stewart?
Well, I have my ultimate question. I don't know if we're there.
We got one. Well, we probably got enough time for one. Do you have one more? Otherwise, I can come up with one.
I'm going to let you like to do your question.
Cool. Okay. So my last and final question is, out of all of the releases that you personally have appeared on, Tommy, which one would you recommend as being the one that people should check out first out of all your discography? Hard question.
I know, because I've done so many. I've done different genres.
Yep.
Well, of course, right now I'm going to answer my brand new one that's Doomsday Deferred. I really honestly think it's the best album. I think it's the best production I've done.
Fair.
It's the most personal and closest album to what was my personality. I was truly putting down what I was really feeling. If somebody says, that sounds bad or whatever, I go, yes, I wanted it to sound like that. And I wanted you to think that sound is bad. Yes, I did exactly what I meant to do. Those aren't accidental production things that happened. So anyway, probably that one. In the old days, I think for me, the first or second Hallows Eve album.
Fair. Actually, I got one more. Let's talk about your new album for a second here, just because you mentioned that, because it was kind of polarizing to people. I noticed it was either people seem to love it or hate it. And you're saying, and you just said that was intentional. So why do you think some people really hated it, I guess?
I don't know. I expect them to be polarized, because if you do something unusual, then you're taking the stance that, you know, there's going to be people who do not like this.
Yeah.
There's going to be people who do love this.
Yeah.
And, but you get ready to have some thick skin, because there's going to be people who don't like it. Yep. They don't understand it. It's not their thing. They don't find an association with it.
Yeah.
That didn't happen to them, you know, or whatever. But then there's the other kids in the back of the class or in the hall.
Yep.
Canadians. You know, there's other kids who do get it, and that's just what they were looking for. If you want to try to please everybody, which you're not, then you would try to put out the most insanely average thing possible, but nobody's ever going to remember you existed if you're doing the same chords, the same thing, saying the same thing, same presentation, and you might be popular for the moment, but in 10 years, everybody's going to, you're just one of those bands who did the same thing. But the ones who will stand out in the future, I think, are the ones who try to do something different.
Mm-hmm, I agree. And that's why I like the album too. It's like, it was very different from anything I've heard before. And I was surprised that like some people didn't like it, but I felt like it was just because they didn't understand it.
I think it's the same with the kind of thing you're doing with your solo album was very different. And I don't think it's for everybody, but I think it's for a lot of people. I think you'd be surprised how many people who are hardcore go, nah, I really needed that. Sometimes I need this kind of thing.
Yes.
I loved your solo album.
Thank you.
So I think I'm done on questions. So Gaia, let's do the ultimate question here.
Yes, very important question. And like, if you watched the pods before, you know exactly what I'm going to ask you, but what is your favorite dinosaur?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. But you had to show me one, though.
Well, I have one here.
I should have known this was coming. I don't know why I didn't know this was coming. I don't know. I'm a Jurassic Park fan, so I'm going to go with the raptors.
Oh, they're cool. They're cool. Like, basically, they're giant, like, ostriches.
Yeah, I think I like them because they're clever and they work together. They're
social. Yeah. Social creature.
Dinosaurs. They found power in numbers. They run in packs. I kind of like the whole idea of them. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. A good choice.
Awesome. Favorite. So I'm going to wrap this up. Thank you very much, Tommy, for coming. And with that, we are done.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.